But my role was to teach technology. And so I did a lot of helping people learn the skills to get back into the workforce or to supplement what they already had. So learning about what a screen reader was. And then for some people, it was really kind of learning about what the computer was and how that worked and what different software packages would help them along the way.
That's Adam Rodebeck, an accessibility specialist at Salesforce. And I'm Josh Burke, a developer evangelist at Salesforce. And here on the Salesforce Developer Podcast, you will hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today on the podcast, we talk with Adam about accessibility design and his journey to his dream job at Salesforce. Adam is himself blind and has professionally always been involved in either testing, developing, or designing systems for accessibility. And his route to Salesforce started in a way familiar to many when his company bought it for CRM.
Well, this was in 2009, and we had just started using Salesforce. We actually used it for all of our client entry stuff. And I remember sitting in the training, and to me, it was like, oh, we got to use this new data entry tool, and that was going to be a hassle and all of that. But I was in one of the training sessions, and they were teaching us how to build a list view. And it just sort of clicked. I'm like, this is a database system. And that got my engineering juices flowing, and I got excited about it being a database. And on top of that, one that I could actually use, at least to the extent of like building out the list views and things like that. And that to me in 2009 was very, very cool because there just wasn't a lot of enterprise level software. In fact, when the company told us that we were going to be using this new package, I immediately was like, oh, great. So here's one that's not going to be accessible. This will be a fun, interesting experience going through the training. But I was really pleasantly surprised.
Now, 2009 means this is also that era of Salesforce known as pre-Trailhead. So when it came to learning the platform, Adam had to do it the old-fashioned way.
My career changed a little bit, and I went from working as a technology instructor to working in our IT department and kind of developing the strategy that we used for evaluating different tools like that. So a couple of years down the road, and we're now thinking about what is going to be accessible. And as I was kind of delving into this Salesforce thing, it was a lot of just Google searches and YouTube videos. I got to attend a Dreamforce in 2013. So all the hands-on sessions there, they really got me started. And then once I realized that, hey, these are all recorded, then I found like hours and hours of content that I could just go back and figure out whatever it was that I was interested in. So initially kind of Apex and Visual Force, things like that. And then later on, as it developed, you know, learning about how to build workflows and things like that.
Personally, I can find Dreamforce to be overwhelming on many levels. And one of them is physical. And even that on many levels, sometimes it's just a challenge to navigate and move around. So I took this chance to ask Adam how Salesforce did on making the event friendly and accessible.
It was, I have to say, amazing. Actually, I had just gotten my seeing eye dog, Laddie. So we had been together maybe a year. And he's from New Jersey. So while we did training, we did some out in New York City. So I was a little used to crowds, but it was like a day, right? And I'm from Indianapolis. It was an overwhelming experience the first time I walked into the Moscone, and it's just people everywhere. But Laddie did a fabulous job. I was hooked on the city immediately, just the vibe and everything that is Dreamforce being so cool that I haven't missed one since.
Now, while at Dreamforce, Adam found one instructor to be especially helpful when it came to learning the platform. And I wanted to point this out because there's this trend of people involved with Trailhead being out there in the community. You might have heard Jessica Murphy a few weeks ago talking about Chris Duarte, who is now VP of Trailhead Content presenting. And for Adam, well, it was none other than now VP of Trailhead Evangelism, Leah McGowan-Hare.
Oh, yes. I definitely have to credit Leah as being my first instructor. She taught me the first bit of Apex. It was how to write triggers hands-on. And from then on, you know, I was hooked. So I'm looking for specifically videos with Leah in them and trying to attend hands-on where she was the instructor. So
Adam is working with Salesforce, but not for Salesforce. And how he got from there to here is something of a journey. And I don't mean that euphemistically. It was literally quite a journey.
Well, I first started out, I got a job working at one of the consulting partners in Indianapolis, and there I was doing just basic Visual Force work and some back-end Apex stuff. But I saw on Twitter that there was going to be a presentation from the local Salesforce user group in San Francisco from the accessibility team. And I thought, you know, I could go and just check that out, see what they're saying about accessibility. Maybe there are things that I don't know that I could make my Visual Force a little bit better. So kind of on a whim, I flew out for this like 6 p.m. meeting, And it was like I landed in San Francisco at noon and my flight was at midnight to go home. So it was this whirlwind trip, but it was so worth it because I was blown away by the accessibility team. I remember I was kind of asking questions about like, why would you do it this way and why not another way? And it really came down to the answer was because this way is the right way. And that's the one that uses the most semantic HTML and it's what will make sense. And I thought about that for a minute. And my question was around, you know, why not use these ARIA roles to kind of mimic a button or whatever it might be? And I'm like, these guys are saying that I need to just do it, use a button because that's what HTML wants you to do. And I so agreed with that philosophy and with the passion that they had just in the presentation. I could tell that they were focused on accessibility for the right reasons, to help people out and to make sure that everyone was going to be able to use the product. But I was so impressed with it that I went home and I emailed the presenter and just said, hey, I've always wanted to do something that was going to give back to the blindness community, but I didn't really know exactly what that was going to be, and kind of explained that I had worked at a nonprofit, was kind of feeling my way through my professional career. But after seeing his presentation, it kind of clicked with me and this is what I wanted to do. It would encompass using Salesforce, helping people to use Salesforce in a better way, and give back by making the platform more accessible. So it took a little while, probably another year before a position opened and I was able to apply and come in, but I ended up doing what I would call my dream job.
And that dream job being an accessibility specialist at Salesforce. And what exactly does that job entail?
Sure. Well, I like to think of us kind of as a consultant. And so it begins with the design process. And Salesforce has the three releases that we do each year. So as we're working on the beginning of a release, the accessibility specialists are working with the designers for their particular cloud. So for me, it's Sales Cloud. And I'm just talking to people about what are the features that we're going to be working on this release? What's going to be new? What things should we consider along the way? Is it components that we've already built that we can just reuse the look and feel from something else? Or is it going to be all net new? And kind of a piece of that is the Salesforce Lightning design system and the Lightning components that come along with it. So what we really try to do is steer everybody toward reusing the components because those have been designed with accessibility from the start. The hope is that you'd be able to just take one of these components, plug it in, and it's going to do all of the nice accessibility hooks and talk to the different assistive technologies.
Fundamentally, Adam's job is centered around three key players: the user, the accessibility tech the user interfaces with, and then the web application interfacing with that tech. If a screen reader, for example, is trying to make a button usable, it needs to be able to read the HTML in a way that confirms it is in fact a button. And one of the ways to do this is ARIA tags, which many web developers may be familiar with. I actually learned from Adam ARIA stands for Accessible Rich Internet Application. And for developers of a certain age, you know, rich internet application was the term we were using back when people were trying to figure out, like, am I going to use Flash? Am I going to use dynamic HTML? So how does it hold up today?
This kind of goes into what I was talking about earlier when I was asking at the accessibility thing that I went to why they weren't using some of these ARIA roles. And there are kind of two ways of thinking of it. So you can use the ARIA tags to retrofit something and make it more correctly reflect what it does. A good example is a button. So I make a div look like a button, and you can give it a role to make it tell the screen reader that this is a button. But it's better to use the HTML button from the start, because then you don't have to worry about adding the attributes, making sure that they're correct. And, you know, HTML5 is supposed to give us everything that we need. So ARIA is here to bridge the gap. And it should be used when necessary, but don't overuse it.
And for Adam, it's pretty much a good thing that Flash has been abandoned for HTML5, because not surprisingly, Adam's not a fan.
Flash is kind of that's like the dark old days of the internet. But much like other stuff, it would depend. You get into a Flash application and you might have like 2/3 of it working. And so you're like, okay, awesome, this is going to be good. And then you hit like that one part that's the thing that you really wanted to interact with, and it tells you nothing. It's like graphic. Like, okay, I don't have any idea what that does.
For me, that not only, you know, kind of highlights the terribleness that is Flash, but also the importance of Adam's work and taking accessibility seriously when it comes to web application development. Think about for a second, if you were in an e-commerce situation and you were only allowed to use 2/3 of the application for your shopping experience. So you can browse, you can search, you can put things into a cart, and then you go to pay with your credit card and you just get graphic. It's just graphic. It's not a cart. It's not your items. It's nothing that you can actually use to go do your Christmas shopping with. So if ARIA is only good in moderation, then what is semantic HTML?
Yeah, so this is really just using HTML in its raw sense. So if you're designing a button, to use the HTML button tag. If you're designing an input, then use the HTML input tag. And the reason for that is because those semantic HTML elements, they have roles that are already built in. And that's really important because when that role gets communicated to the assistive technology, it defines how the thing is going to be used. So if you are telling the assistive technology that this is a tree view, for instance, then the expectation is that I should be able to up and down arrow between each one of the nodes, and that I can expand and collapse them with the left and right arrow. Now, that maybe was a bad example because there's not a native HTML tree view element, so you have to put that one together. But it does demonstrate the roles that you attach to it, then describe to assistive technology, whether it's a screen reader or something different, how they can interact with something.
We're talking about accessibility design in a very high level here. If a developer really wants to start to get down into the details, where should they go?
I think the W3C's ARIA authoring practices is a really good place to start. If you're really curious about what makes something accessible and what the different pieces are, that's a site which takes you through some of the very basics. They might even be things that you're not familiar with the terminology, say a combo box, a list box. There are things like a radio group. And, you know, some of those are familiar, some are kind of new. A grid. The site kind of takes you through, this is the way that you would structure it. These are the keyboard interactions. These are the attributes that you need to add to it, the roles. And it really kind of takes you through the best practices and shows you even examples of how you can put things together, what will work and what doesn't work.
And well, that's a good intro to the present. What does the future hold?
I think the future is probably, it's just going to be more. I think that still we're kind of in this hybrid sense of like web page versus web app. And I see us going more into the realm of web apps. And it's all about the browser right now. So there's still a lot of work that has to be done between the operating system, the browser, and the assistive technology. So if the assistive tech is a screen reader, the browser is going to read what's on the page and then represent that to the screen reader in a way that hopefully makes sense. But you're relying on three things there. So the screen reader properly identifying the stuff that comes from the browser properly identifying the stuff that comes from the web developer, and then the web developer doing it correct, at least to their knowledge. And that has been something that has evolved over the years, and it's going to just get better.
All right. Now, before we go, I did ask Adam about his hobbies outside of work, and he was telling me about a sport called beep baseball, which I'm going to have him describe in detail because I find it both fascinating and something that sounds like a lot of fun.
Sure. So it maybe is a little more like softball. So we use a modified 16-inch softball that has a beeper put inside it. And that thing is just beeping constantly. And then the pitcher is on our team. So if you think about coach pitch, it's a little like that. The pitcher is trying to put it in a place that we're going to swing at each time. And they give us a cadence as they throw the ball in. So you're really working on this thought of timing rather than the sound of the ball coming toward you. So they're saying set, ready, pitch, and you're going to swing on that timing. And hopefully, if things work out, then the ball is going to be in that magic spot where your bat comes through and you get a hit. Then we have two bases rather than the three that you would usually have. One is at first and one is at third. And we put them 10 feet off of the line so that the runner is going to be a little bit outside of fair territory and you don't have to worry about the fielders in that case. So those bases have a buzzer in them. And an extra wrinkle that gets thrown in is that they randomly turn one or the other on. So once you hit the ball, you have to kind of take a second and figure out, am I going to run to first or am I going to run to third? And then the goal is for you to get to the base and tag it before a fielder picks the ball up. So they're using the beep to identify where it is, and the fielder's goal is to just get the ball up and under control before you get to the base. So every play results in either a run or an out.
And that's our show. I want to thank Adam for his time and all of his dedication when it comes to accessibility design. If you would like to learn more about this podcast, please go to developer.salesforce.com/podcast and go listen and subscribe to your podcasting service of choice. Thanks, and I'll talk to you next week.